Our data certainly indicates that the majority of households in rural Kenya are not benefiting from these residential electrification investments in the short to medium run. And we measured many different sets of outcomes, economic outcomes, health, education. We looked at even crime. Did crime fall when there's better lighting? No, there was no effect there. So that is discouraging.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. In 2011, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon described energy as the golden thread that connects economic growth, increased social equity, and an environment that allows the world to thrive. Well, how strong is that connection? At a country level, there's a clear correlation between electricity consumption per capita and GDP. But despite a lot of research, evidence that residential electrification causes individual households to thrive is still hard to find. A new paper investigates under what circumstances energy really is that golden thread. Ted Miguel of Berkeley is one of the authors. Ted, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello, Tim.
Ban's argument seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it, Ted? I mean, connecting to electrical power seems bound to allow more women to work outside the home, for example.
Yeah, I think you're right. When we have power, we can't even imagine living life without it. Mm. And I think that's where our assumptions come from. We look at our washing machines and our dishwashers and our TVs and all these things that make our lives easier and think, gosh, you know, modern life wouldn't exist without electricity. We would be spending so much time just washing our clothes. We wouldn't have time for anything else. So it really does seem like a no-brainer that having access to electricity would free up time and allow people to work outside the home. And certainly historically, there's a lot of evidence that when the adoption of electrical appliances took off in Western Europe and North America in the 50s and 60s, it helped to unleash female labor market participation.
We intuitively assume as well that it improves the outcomes from education too.
Exactly. I mean, if we think about kids having electric light so they can study, it seems obvious that once you electrify a home, kids are going to be able to study more and do better on their tests. That was always my presumption before I started doing research in this area.
This is a topic where there is loads of research about this. I was surprised to find out that we really do seem to lack firm evidence that these effects exist.
That's right. There's really a literature that looks across countries and finds very strong correlations between having electricity and a wide range of outcomes. And that seems to reinforce all the assumptions we were making before. But as researchers, together with my co-authors, Ken Lee of UChicago and Catherine Wolfram of Berkeley, when we started doing research on the topic in depth, we realized that the literature at the household level, at the microeconomic level, using more detailed data, was actually lacking in several important respects.
And so your paper's a sort of detective story about this, isn't it? It's about why we get these seemingly contradictory results. Let's first of all look at the most basic evidence. What do the statistics actually mean when they're recording that a household has access to electricity in a developing world?
The statistics are very rough. They record whether households are connected to power or sometimes even just live in an area where power is accessible, where they could connect to power. So the data is really incomplete because one of the things we found in our research in rural Kenya is as the government of Kenya over the past 10, 15 years or so has expanded investments in electrification, there are large numbers of households that live near a transformer. They live near power. But they don't have access to it. They're not connected. So we actually created a term for these households. We call them under-grid households. You know, we usually think of on-grid and off-grid. Well, in Kenya, there are millions of under-grid households. They may be able to see the transformer right near their home, but they're not connected. So just building out that large-scale infrastructure isn't enough. Households may not connect. Even if they do connect, problems with reliability, poor maintenance of the infrastructure mean that even households that are connected to power very often may not get it for weeks at a time.
So it's really telling us very little about the way these households are actually living. We're talking more about the infrastructure on a macro level.
Exactly. It really is an issue on some level of data limitation. And that was one of the things we sought to address in our own research.
Let's look also at how the researchers whose work you've reviewed tested that causal link from electricity to these positive outcomes. What's making you question the econometric assumptions or the methods that they've used in these papers?
Before us, there was a really nice group of early studies that had the same questions we did and were trying to understand these links at a micro level, but they struggled with trying to find ways to pinpoint causal relationships. How can we really say these relationships are electricity driving a certain outcome? And what several early papers relied on was variation in local geographic characteristics as drivers of those electrification investments. So a number of scholars found, for instance, that in areas that are hillier, that have steeper land gradients, it's costlier to build out the electricity infrastructure, and those areas tend to get less investment in electrification. So that seems like a plausible starting point. Some of those early studies then found that these hillier areas also had worse economic outcomes. And they concluded that the causality ran from a lack of electricity investment to those outcomes. Now, our concern with some of those studies, and this is some points other researchers have made, is being in an area with particular geographic characteristics, like a steep land gradient, sure, it can affect whether you get an electricity investment, but it can also affect many other outcomes. Mm. It can affect how costly it is, for instance, to build roads. It could make it harder to go to market due to these geographic costs and factors. So taken together, we have some concerns about interpreting those relationships between geographic characteristics and household economic outcomes in a causal way. There are just too many other confounders, omitted variables, third factors that could be affecting outcomes at the same time.
Is it possible for the causal link to go in the other direction as well?
Certainly. So not only could electrification affect household economic outcomes, but households' income levels and their socioeconomic status could affect their likelihood of getting electrification in the first place. On some level, that's the most basic concern with these causal relationships. When we look across countries, higher levels of electrification are linked to income, but maybe it's just that richer households can afford electrical power.
There are also interesting differences in the history that you go into between electrification programs too. They were not all created equal. Particularly, I was interested that you go all the way back to the 1930s, how electrification was done in the rural United States. What clues does that give us about electrification almost 100 years on?
The US case is really interesting. In the 1930s, during the New Deal in the United States, rural electrification rates were very low and very similar to rural electrification rates in many African countries today. The US government at the time put in place this very ambitious initiative to electrify rural areas, but they did it in a pretty interesting way. They didn't just build out the power lines. They also undertook a number of complementary activities to try to boost economic outcomes in rural areas. So for instance, in addition to building out the electricity grid, they also subsidized appliances for rural households. They also provided information and training on how to use electrical power in agricultural production in order to boost agricultural productivity. So this combination of power generation, distribution, power access for households, combined with access to appliances and training, appears to have had large effects. There's some economic history studies from the US suggesting that living standards in rural areas improved a lot in the subsequent decades, in part because of electrification.
Clearly, we need to know more detail about how individual households could use and how they would value electricity. I believe that you went into this and tried an RCT. How much richer is the data you can get from a controlled trial like this?
We were inspired by some of that early work, and we launched an RCT, a randomized controlled trial in rural Kenya, that subsidized access to the expanding electricity grid for rural households. Really, there's two strong elements we think of this design. One is the randomization helps us deal with the issues of causality I was mentioning before. If we randomize subsidies across villages, there's not any mechanical link between local conditions there, whether geographic or economic, and access to electricity. So that was a key part of the design. But the other really key part of the design was our ability to collect novel types of data. So rather than just relying on this very rough sort of national administrative data or census data on electricity access, we designed our own surveys to measure things about appliance use, appliance aspirations, what kinds of things people might like to do with power, education. We actually administered tests to children in these homes to see, like, after they got power, did they study more? We asked them about their time use to see if they were studying more in the evening, and a range of other questions related to health and well-being, even happiness questions. The goal of the study was to causally estimate effects, but to really understand and unlock the mechanisms at the same time to help solve this detective puzzle, as you put it.
We're getting into things like the willingness to pay and the desire to have the things that electricity would provide, not just a question of whether there is electricity running into the house.
That's exactly right. And in fact, when we designed this subsidy RCT, we varied the level of subsidies that were offered to different villages. So in some villages, electricity was basically given away for free. We raised funds to fully subsidize it. But in other villages, they had to pay partial subsidies. So that let us understand how much demand there was for power at different prices. And we found there was actually a great variation in households' ability and willingness to pay for power. When power was free, when it was fully subsidized, almost everybody connected. Maybe that's not too surprising, but when there was a partial subsidy, the majority of households actually chose not to connect to power. It wasn't that everybody was making the same choices. There was clearly some variation, or we would call heterogeneity, in households' interest in this investment.
It's kind of like locking into a different spending pattern where they have to be able to pay for electricity in the long term, I guess, and also to acquire the devices that would make use of the electricity.
That's right. Connecting to power is different than some other utilities. It's different than, say, connecting to water. If I'm connected to water, I can open the tap and just drink it. I get use out of that right away. But with electricity, you can't just use the power. You need an appliance to plug in, exactly as you said. And that appliance could be something very simple, like a light bulb, but it could also be an iron or an industrial tool or a television. And those are far more expensive appliances. So the majority of households, when they had to pay for this connection, opted not to do it because presumably they knew they'd have to be spending more on appliances to get use out of it. And then they'd have to pay for this monthly electricity bill. And that was simply too expensive for most of our households. It's worth keeping in mind in this contrast between the rural Kenyan case that we study and the historical rural US case is even in the 1930s, the typical rural US household was about 8 times richer than the typical Kenyan household today.
Wow.
Income gaps are just huge. And so when we're thinking about needing to buy appliances and sort of what that implies for household budget constraints, if you're a poor rural Kenyan household, that may simply be unaffordable.
It would be naive in the extreme to assume that that didn't make any difference in a decision making on whether you took up electricity. So what did your trial conclude about the differences between households that took the electricity and benefited from it to those that did not benefit from it?
We found some really interesting patterns that suggest that households' ability and willingness to pay for power very strongly correlates with the benefits they get from power. This is a sort of pattern that economists would like to believe always holds. It doesn't always hold in data. Sometimes people buy things that are bad for them, or they don't buy things that are good for them. But in our case, it sort of lines up with economic theory. For the households that got power for free, that really only took on power when it was free, we don't observe much in the way of socioeconomic benefits. Those households don't see an improvement in labor force participation, even for women who had been hypothesized to be a group that would benefit. We don't see gains in health. We don't see even improvements in child test scores. And this was one of the disappointing things for us. We had that very strong assumption going into the study that by providing power to rural Kenyan households, we would unleash all these kids' energy to study. We actually find that there's no effect on test scores for the household that get connected. When they get connected for free, we did some data collection on time use of these kids. It actually turns out they do study a little bit more in the evening after they get connected to power, because almost all the households did at least get a light bulb. But they study a bit less during the daytime. So they were out playing with their friends during the day when it was light. And then at home, they crammed in their homework just before going to bed, proving that these rural Kenyan kids are just like kids everywhere. So that was the first set of results. In contrast, the households in villages that had to pay for power, that had to pay something substantial for power, have much larger gains from being connected in terms of the size of these effects. They tend to have bigger increases in starting businesses, bigger increases in health gains. They simply use much more power. We're able to measure how much electricity they consume. The households that were willing to pay for power consume more, they buy more appliances, they just get much more use out of it. Whereas the households that were only willing to get power when it was free really just don't use much power. And in trying to understand these differences, we looked at some of the characteristics of these households. And it turns out that these households that were willing and able to pay for electrical power on average were, not surprisingly, richer, more educated, or more likely to have a bank account. They simply had more means and opportunity to use electrical power.
Do you know anything about their level of ambition?
Yeah, so this is one of the things that we're really interested in. We did ask some questions about having or owning a business or an enterprise at baseline, and there's some suggestive evidence that these households that are more willing to connect were the more entrepreneurial, you could think of them as a rural middle class type household that was starting the business. So there's some indication that households that have more, let's say, business ambition or a business opportunity really were some of the households that took advantage of electrical power. For us, in looking at these results, one of the things that came to mind is attempts to provide power in rural areas in places like Kenya might potentially exacerbate inequality in these rural areas. It really was the richer households, the households that had more business activity, more ambition, that seemed to get the most out of electrical power, moving ahead of their neighbors. So even though one of the goals in providing universal power in rural Africa is to provide opportunity for the poorest of the poor, the very poor in rural Kenya don't appear to have the means, the income, or the opportunity to do very much with electrical power, whereas their richer neighbors do.
This does sound like bad news, Ted, for the success of these large, expensive investments, because they are very expensive, aren't they, in providing universal access to power, Ban Ki-moon's golden thread. Does it mean that these investments are misguided?
We've struggled coming up with broad implications for a couple of reasons. I think in the Kenyan case that we study, our data certainly indicates that the majority of households in rural Kenya are not benefiting from these residential electrification investments in the short to medium run. So exactly as you were suggesting, they're not benefiting in any way we can measure. And we measured many different sets of outcomes, economic outcomes, health, education. We looked at even crime. Did crime fall when there's better lighting? No, there was no effect there. So that is discouraging. At the same time, it could be that in the long run, these investments do pay off when households do become richer and they are able to afford the appliances they need. So my own view on this right now is in the short to medium run, there would be almost certainly be a higher return to government policymakers or foreign aid donors dedicating resources in other areas. It could be in agriculture. It could be in water, health, education. There's so many different areas where there could be high return activities in, say, a rural African community other than electrification. That said, in the long run, as African incomes hopefully continue to rise as they have over the last couple decades, eventually households in rural areas will be rich enough to afford the appliances to allow them to use electrical power effectively. We certainly don't mean to say with our results that electricity and electrification investments will never make sense, but in the poorest rural communities today, they feel premature. And then maybe a decade down the road or two, they would have a much higher return than they would today.
That tallies with the United States' historical experience, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. And those high returns to rural electrification in the United States weren't just from connecting homes to power. They were connecting homes to power and doing so much more. There's a similar historical experience in Brazil from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, where there were massive investments in electrification and complementary infrastructure, roads and other forms of infrastructure. And there's some historical studies indicating that those investments had a high payoff in Brazil. So I do think that thinking about policy in a broader way would be useful. So for instance, in Kenya, there's a big emphasis on connecting rural households to achieve Ban Ki-moon's goal and the Millennium Development Goals of connecting households to power. But there hasn't yet been as much emphasis on subsidizing appliances or making these complementary investments. And that's a direction that we think public policy in many low-income countries could very usefully go.
We do have targets. Sustainable Development Goal number 7 is about electrification. You can imagine that maybe there would be a big push investment behind this. Are we in danger of over-investing in that if it doesn't create the returns that people are expecting?
I'm personally very concerned about that. I think the long-run goal of universal access to electricity is laudable, and I strongly support it. But in the short run, scarce foreign aid dollars and government resources could likely be more effectively utilized in other sectors, until households are rich enough to be able to do something with power. And it doesn't mean that we abandon the goal. It's really more of a postponement, let's say, of the sustainable development goals. to a time when the complementary factors are in place to make electrification investments worthwhile.
Ted, that's very interesting. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
The paper we've been discussing is called Does Household Electrification Supercharge Economic Development? And the authors are Kenneth Lee, Edward Miguel, and Catherine Wolfram. And that's published in the Journal of Economic Perspectives, Winter 2020. And the good news is that for the next few months, there's open access to the JEB, so you can all read it. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. If you enjoyed it, subscribe on your podcast platform and you will never miss an episode. Or you can find past episodes at voxdev.org.